Who is excited for the Greek Freak Ones?
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble. Another season preview podcast ready for you guys to listen to and hopefully enjoy. We're going to be talking about one of the playoff teams in the Eastern Conference today, and that is the Milwaukee Bucks. And I bring in a person who is who's considering transferring their fan allegiance paper towards this team. That is Kyle McEwen. Kyle, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Josh.
We how close are you to switching to the close to hometown Bucks over your Pistons?
It's pretty close. It's hard to root for the Pistons right now, considering we don't even know what their front office is, and we're like a month out from the draft. So it's pretty frustrating if you're a fan of the Pistons to think we just let go of our head coach, and we don't really know who's going to be running our front office going into next year yet. We're just okay with going into the draft with a dead weight in Jeff Bauer, or are you going to actually extend him beyond his contract, which ends on June 30th? So, yeah, dude, I'm pretty much hip deep into the Bucks as far as my fandom goes these days, but it's hard to cut the string all the way, you know? You're always going to at least go back and, like, look at your ex's social media without trying to make sure making sure you don't like something inadvertently. So
I'll have to speak to Tom Gores and make sure he blocks you so you can't get back in there and view those things. So you're just completely cut off, clean break, all ready to go. And I suppose it does make more sense to you, given you are closer to the Bucks in terms of being able to see their games and more ensconced in Milwaukee media as opposed to the Detroit stuff. So you are uniquely positioned here to give us your thoughts on this Bucks team, who do they did manage to keep their first round draft choice heading into this season, thanks to a coin toss, which caused them to finish with the 17th pick. Otherwise, if it had have gone, one higher or one lower, I don't exactly remember how it was supposed to go, then they would have lost that pick to Phoenix as part of the Eric Bledsoe deal. They don't have a second round pick at all in this draft. Look, at this point in the draft, you're just looking for the best possible player, but they're not also in really a spot where they're going to be getting a player who's going to be a huge rotational piece. Although the front court, Kyle, is especially at center, and depending on what happens with Jabari Parker, there might be an opening for someone who could surprise in that area.
Yeah, I don't think that you look at the Bucks center position and say that that's locked down at all. No. With Giannis being there, you could even say that they could look at bringing in a different power forward in some respects, but obviously that's probably not the way they're going to go. They're looking for some kind of defensive center that they can rely on. Hopefully somebody who can still do something on offense, but it'll be interesting to see which way they go, or if we just hear Coach Budenholzer come out and say, no, we're going with Thon, he's going to be fine, and he's going to be our guy next year.
We'll talk about Thon a little bit in a little bit. We'll talk about a few things to wrap up with their offseason in terms of upcoming free agents. They've got Jason Terry and Shabazz Muhammad, who are both unrestricted free agents. Terry, of course, at the ripe old age of 122. I'm not sure if he will be back in action. Muhammad came across and provided probably more than I anticipated, but that shouldn't be a surprise that he was unable to thrive under Tom Thibodeau, given how Tom Thibodeau has no idea of how to use a rotation or a bench properly. But the biggest decision off-season-wise is the restricted free agents, and that is Xavier Mumford, of course, Marshall Plumlee, and last but not least, Jabari Parker. Jabari Parker, Kyle, what do you think they should do? What do you think they should be offering, and how much would be too much that you would say, nah, we're good, fam, you can go somewhere else?
It's hard to know without knowing exactly what the Bucks believe about the health of his knees going forward. If they think that Jabari's knees are in a good spot, he's not at risk of having a third ACL tear, then maybe you lean towards his talent and the fact that you drafted him and the idea that you do want him to play next to Giannis for several years, and you sign him to a contract that's maybe a little bit more than what people think Jabari deserves based on what we've seen so far. I wouldn't want to overpay him. I wouldn't be surprised if they pay him $100 million just because, but I don't think that that's where we're going. I hope that they rest somewhere in between the 60 to 80 range and they find something that kind of mitigates the risk of signing Jabari but keeps him with the team, because I still think that he's an interesting talent. Overall, though, I don't know how well he fits on a team where you already have Giannis and Chris Middleton at those forward spots. So unless you're going to shift Giannis up to center a lot, or you're going to run a bunch of just five wing lineups, I don't know if it's worth signing Jabari to too big of a long-term contract. And maybe you just give him the qualifying offer and see what happens out there in restricted free agency, and maybe you get lucky on something.
Yeah, there's so many interesting parts and pieces to this Jabari thing. Like, would he be, if he can't find long-term deals, would he be willing to take a one-year, the qualifying offer? Will he take a two-year, $40 million non-guaranteed second-year deal and see what happens there in terms of his knee health? There's so many moving parts and pieces. We saw some good parts from him. He also struggled at big stretches this year. How much of that was fit? How much of that was NBA play style? How much of that was knee? Like, there's just a lot of things that are unanswered about Jabari Parker. They've also got a couple of guys with non-guaranteed deals. One of those is Malcolm Brogdon. That will 100% be a guaranteed deal. Then they've got Brando Jennings and Tyler Zeller, two guys who came in late in the season who did some things, but overall they're not key parts of a winning team as we move forward. This Bucks team, I guess, disappointed after they fired Jason Kidd because he's not a good coach. Joe Prunty, also not a good coach. 44-38 this season. They were 20th in pace, 8th in offense, and 19th in defense. You would expect that there is some hope for them to increase their defense given the personnel there, and now they have Budenholzer in as their head coach. I spoke with Eric Name of Locked On Bucks on the Locked On NBA podcast a couple of weeks ago, now speaking about his potential concerns for a Budenholzer fit and the potential benefits of it. How do you feel about Budenholzer now in Milwaukee? Was that the guy that you were hoping that they were signing? And how do you think that he can change things around?
I think the Bucks made the right choice. I was impressed by the list of candidates that we saw Adrian Wojnarowski tweet out and say that they were going to interview and look at throughout the interview process. I feel like the Bucks front office, there's a lot of question marks there because it's a younger guy running the show in John Horst. But they looked at all the right candidates and they hired the right guy in Budenholzer. I think Budenholzer proved with the Hawks that he's a tremendous coach, that and then knowing that he was on the Greg Popovich coaching tree for so long in San Antonio, working hand in hand with him as his top aide, it makes you feel like now that Budenholzer has a collection of top line talent, not just a bunch of good guys that he turned into a great team on the Hawks, having a Chris Middleton and a Giannis Antetokounmpo, this is a great situation for Budenholzer, and the Bucks made, I think they hired the best coach available. So cheers to them for realizing that they had a championship level talent who demanded them getting a coach who can actually take them to that level.
Well, let's see exactly how that plays out. There's still a lot to go under the bridge in terms of how this guy coaching situation works out for the Milwaukee Bucks. In terms of, what else we can look at. We can look at what they did last season, but again, so much of that can change. They got to the line at a good rate. They barely took threes. We'll see if Budenholzer changes that in their overall approach to things. They generated a lot of turnovers, but still, defensively, they weren't in the top half of the league. So hopefully they're able to change some of those things with this team as we move forward. If we have a look, at this, let's have a look at Yanni, because of course he is the number one guy on this team, the guy that we're looking at as the key factor and the best fantasy option here. He's the 7th ranked player last season, Kyle. He played 37 minutes per game, 27 points, half a three, 10 rebounds, almost 5 assists, and 1.5 steals and 1.5 blocks. And I guess some people would think, overall for fantasy, it was possibly a little bit disappointing. Some people were thinking that he could be a number one guy, a top three player. What do you think that changed, or what did change with him that made him perhaps slightly underperform, even though those numbers are still obviously really impressive?
Yeah, I think we saw Giannis's rebounds go up. He played an extra minute per game this year. His assists, his steals, and his blocks went down a little bit. I don't think the assists going down is a huge surprise because it was a full year playing with Chris Middleton. It was adding Eric Bledsoe to the mix, an additional primary ball handler onto the roster. His three-point attempts went down, and that's a little bit annoying to me because you would just hope that the coaches would be pushing him to extend more and more. His three-point percentage was slightly up, though, this year from 27% to just over 30%. So I know it's still not great to say that Giannis is shooting 30% from three-point land, but it shows progress a little bit. So that speaks to having a little bit of hope that he's going to continue to build that shot out and stretch the floor more and more. It's hard to say that he had a down year. I do think that if there's one thing in regard to his fantasy production that you're just a little bit disappointed in is the steals and the blocks going down the defensive numbers, because that's what makes him so special is that defensive impact.
Yeah, he went from 1.7 and steals and 1.9 blocks down to 1.5 and 1.4. And it doesn't seem like much, but you're talking about 25% of the overall value in those two numbers from 16-17 to 17-18, and that prevents a guy that, even though he jumped up 4 points per game, he grabbed an extra rebound per game, it prevents him from going from the sixth ranked player that he was last season to the top and to just hovering around that same level, because some things went up and some things went down. If he maintained that same defensive presence and still upped his usage and scoring ability, then he was a top three player, then he was in a top two, challenging top one sort of a guy, but he didn't. There was a trade off between offense and defense, and he wasn't able to take as large a step forward as what we may have been hoping. But if those numbers can come up, which is always a concern, and if the three-pointers can come up again, which is still, it's all in doubt, then he can push forward for here. But yeah, you feel like Giannis is going to be a top eight guy, top seven guy for the next 5, 6, 7, maybe 10 years. Maybe that's pushing it a little bit too far, but he is still only 23. So you're looking at a fairly long stretch of being this guy, and there is still room for improvement in those areas. Now, Eric Bledsoe came across in that early season trade from Phoenix. He, in exchange for Greg Monroe and that first round draft choice, which isn't conveying this season. Not that it's a huge price to pay for Bledsoe, but he was up and down this year. Averaged over the course of the year almost 18 points, 4 boards, 5 assists. But the 2 steals, the 0.6 blocks, that's what really got his fantasy value cranking, and he was a top 25 player this year. Shot 47, 80, and 35%. But the way that his fantasy value reflects as a top 25 guy, it's not necessarily the same as his on-court value, and you always feel that the Bucks are still not happy with that position with him there. Is that a realistic assessment of how they view that spot?
His game is a little bit awkward. It seems to stunt things or just put a hitch into the giddy-up of the offense at times. But I would hope that Budenholzer bringing in a new coach and putting in a new offensive scheme would help to alleviate a lot of the issues that people may see if they're not a fan of how Bledsoe fits naturally, into the real basketball aspect of things. But as far as his production in fantasy this season, it was great, and he definitely stepped up after getting traded to the Bucks, moving from a crappy situation where you're not happy playing into one where you're actually competing and playing with other good players who are actively trying to win every night. It can make a big impact on a player's production and what he offers in fantasy.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we saw from him. He was more engaged, and those defensive numbers came back for Bledsoe, which was, again, a key part and a huge part in his overall value for the season. We had Chris Middleton return. Like, he did come back last season after that hamstring injury, but a full season out of Middleton. He's 26 years of age. He played all 82 games, 36 minutes, another 20-point per game scoring year for him. Almost 2 threes, 5 boards, 4 assists, 1.5 steals, 47, 88, and 36. this is just really perfect stuff for one of those guys that you take in that third round, perhaps maybe not second round. He finished 26th this season, but yeah, good scoring, good rebounds, good assists, good steals, good threes. It's like the perfect rotisserie player as well, Kyle, because there's really no weaknesses in his overall game. And at the age of 26, despite some of the limitations he does have, again, we should expect a couple more seasons from him in this same vein, because I don't really see what's actually improving or what's actually going to get worse in the next couple of years.
Well, and hey, for all those contract narrative people, he really just has one more guaranteed year too. So next year for Chris Middleton might be the year.
And that that contract he had was people were not impressed with it at the time, but it's turned out to be a very, 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 very positive deal for the Bucks overall. At that, I think 4 years, $48 million is what he signed for originally, and that's obviously worked out pretty damn well for them and for him. And another strong season for big Chrissy Middleton, a guy that is as good a player as. Many people don't anticipate. Not only that sentence doesn't really make much sense, but for the casual fan, they don't realize just how good he is and how solid he is in many different areas across this entire team. Finished third on the team in PER and was strong defensively and is able to create more of his own offense now as well. Now, a guy who was really good and really surprising as a rookie, the rookie of the year from 16-17, Malcolm Brogdon. It wasn't the best season for him. Only 48 games with that leg injury, 30 minutes, 13 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.3 triples, a steal, 49, 88, and 39. This is a team that's filled with guys with really strong efficiency. Their best four fantasy guys all shot at least 47% from the field, which is fantastic considering three of them are guards in Bledsoe, Middleton, and Brogdon, and the other one's Adetokounmpo, who doesn't really shoot any threes. But that's outstanding efficiency. But Brogdon, he regressed. And I think that we sort of assumed that would be somewhat of the case once Bledsoe arrived. I didn't like the way that they limited him. I thought there was some really poor coaching decisions to leave him out of rotations entirely, to play Tony Snell considerably more minutes than him. But at the end of the year, and just before his injury, he was back in that starting lineup, starting to play in an off-ball role and putting up okay numbers. But I think that we've seen the ceiling for Brogdon, and I don't know if he ever reaches that again, given the presence of Bledsoe and Middleton now fully healthy.
It's if the Bucks are healthy, if Jabari's playing a lot next year, it's hard to see how Brogdon could blossom much more. But then again, maybe he gets put into a different kind of role, or maybe Budenholzer leans on him more than what we would expect. Because I do love his profile. I love his size for the positions that he can play. I still really like Brogdon's game. I don't think there's anything to dislike about it. His production is good when he plays, and I don't want to look too hard at his holes in his game at the end of the season or in the few games that he, in the playoffs, just because it's such a small sample size with him coming back from injury. But I do like how he fits on the team as a competent, good role player going forward.
Do you? I know we're talking early stages here, but surely he has a big chance to be getting those minutes over Tony Snell next year. Because Snell, again, was horrendous, as he is pretty much all the time that he's out there. I'm not a big Tony Snell fan, as many people who listen to this podcast will be well aware of. And Brogdon played into that role better, playing as that backup point guard and the starting shooting guard at the same time. And I think that he can establish himself in that role. But yeah, talking upside with him, there is limited upside, I believe. Overall, it's just going to be, can he maintain that solid level of around the ranking of around 100 and play those 30 minutes and get you similar numbers to what he did over the course of this season. Let's talk about the Muppet, John Henson, who had an interesting season. 26 minutes for him, 27 years of age, 9 points and 7 rebounds, 1.4 blocks, 57% from the field and from the line. So obviously not a great free throw shooter, but he is a guy that can provide you blocks. Now, I've been critical of Henson before. I've also been critical of the way that Jason Kidd had used him, but we saw Joe Prunty go with a more structured lineup in terms of running that center position and not, you know, just juggling it every single game. We saw a solid role for Henson. He provided those blocks, but his defense still isn't as good as what it can be for a guy who gets as many block shots as he does. And we know that block shots do not equal good defenders, but I thought he improved a little bit in that area. But with the way that things went in the playoffs, he was getting cooked in those first couple of games and then got injured, and then Thon came in and played really well. I think we should be bracing for a much smaller role for Henson this season. That would be my initial expectation, but Budenholzer could throw that all up in the air.
Yeah, you pretty much nailed everything that I would say about Henson. Budenholzer could, you know, flip the script on any ideas that we might have, but I would. Henson is who he is. He was decent this year when he got plenty of run, but you know, in those 12 games that Thon Maker started, the team was 8-4.
Yep.
So there's something about having a guy who doesn't sit inside the arc and having a guy who's playing center for you who's sitting outside of it, even if he's not making the shots, his 3-point shots at a high clip. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Budenholzer looks at what the Bucks did this last season and just says, look, Henson's got an opportunity to have a role with us this year, but it's going to be off the bench and it's going to be matchup based most likely. Budenholzer had Al Horford as a unconventional center for a long time. Now, obviously, Al Horford fits wonderful in today's NBA as a starting center. But I believe when Al Horford was out at the end of one season, we saw Paul Millsap step into that center role for a lot of minutes for the Hawks, and he averaged like 2.8 blocks per game for the second half of the season a couple of years back. And seeing stuff like that in the past makes me feel like Budenholzer might get to a point where he's like, yeah, we're starting Giannis at center and we're just going to destroy people with our flexibility.
Yeah,
let's see what happens.
Let's play Bledsoe, Brogdon, Middleton, Parker, and Giannis as a starting five. I could definitely see that being the case, and I do feel skeptical that Henson can replicate what he did this season, especially the 26 minutes per game that he saw. Let's talk Jabari, because obviously the numbers this year, they're not going to be indicative of what's going to happen necessarily in the future. Just 24 minutes per game. He did average almost 13 points, 5 rebounds, hit a 3 per game, which had been a prior criticism, but he looks to have got the 3-point shot corrected, and now he can hit them 38% again. 0.8 steals, 2 assists, 48-74. And the fact that he shot 48% coming back from a second ACL is very, very impressive to me. But we saw with Prunty down the stretch that he had no faith in playing Parker, and his minutes were really limited. But there are a couple of stretches that are important to highlight. Towards the end of the regular season, he had a 35-10, a 12-3, 13-10, 16-12-5, 16-9, 25-5, all before the playoffs started. He went, okay, this is Jabari Parker starting to get back into it. The minutes were rising. And in the first two playoff games, he combined for only 25 minutes in those games and scored 2 points. And he thought, shit, what's going on here? But the other five games of that series, he had three double-digit scoring games, 17, 16, and 17 back-to-back. He was grabbing rebounds. He blocked 5 shots in those next 3 games and looked more like the player we saw prior to the ACL injury. So I was getting a little bit sour on Jabari when he came back, because there was a stage where he wasn't under any minutes restriction. They just didn't want to play him because they didn't like what they were seeing from him out in the court. But that got loosened towards the end, and I gained a little bit more faith in Parker towards the end of the season. He even showed some okay defensive efforts when he'd been probably close to the worst big man defender in the league up until that. So did you feel more encouraged by what you saw from Jabari down the stretch, where he does have the ability now, I think, to maybe be that guy that before he tore his ACL last season, he was, you know, on the border of being a top 50 player?
I think the talent's definitely there. You wonder how big of a deal his defensive liabilities really are, and whether or not they are so large that you can't fix them or you can't cover them with other players. I'm still a believer in Jabari. He's still a younger guy. He at just 23, and the scoring ability is there. So if he continues to extend his range and shoot that 3-point shot confidently and do it at a higher clip, there's no reason that if he stays healthy that he's not going to be a you know, a maybe not an all-star level player, but someone who's at least maybe talked about in that respect for a couple seasons throughout his career.
It is surprising to me that he came back and his per 36 numbers look almost identical to what he had last season. The big difference there is his usage went down from 26 to 23, meaning his scoring went from 21 per 36 down to 18 per 36. His percentages look very similar. There is a small dip, a 2 percentage point true shooting drop, which causes, again, a little bit drop in the points. But the threes, the rebounds, the assists, the steals, the blocks, they're all basically at exactly the same level he was before. It's just that he came in, played 24 minutes as opposed to 34 minutes the year before, that his numbers were so far down. So if he pushes back to a 30-minute role, assuming that he can show some level of defensive competence or he can be hidden in the system that Budenholzer wants to run, then there is a significant chance that he can be a top 100 guy again. He showed me enough that the knee, while there is still concerns, that he still can do that. And I think he's going to be a fairly, not reliable is the wrong word. Look, the guy's only 23, but we've got to remember that as well. That he's still got that athleticism still there. He hasn't lost it. It's just, can he focus himself defensively to stay on the court? Because if he can, then the numbers feel like they're just going to come anyway.
You know, and a lot of guys aren't necessarily hanging around with the team when they're injured or, you know, constantly involved in practices and stuff like that. And beyond that, the fact that Jabari was coming back from another major knee injury, you know, it's not that surprising to think, okay, he struggled with his defense. And I don't know. I sometimes worry that narrative gets overblown sometimes. So I would just like to temper expectations about tearing down Jabari, as some people like to do.
People coming back from ACL injuries, their defense sucks. Like Zach LaVine was horrendous defensively, and Jabari's coming back from two. So it does make sense. But again, the ability for him to ramp it up a little bit and be solid defensively without being good, but being okay in the playoffs makes me go, okay, well, let's see what happens from here. It was definitely an encouraging sign there moving forward. Now, let's talk about the guy who does probably the least with the most, and that is Tony Snell. He played 27 minutes per game and averaged 7 points. The 254th ranked player. He gives you under 2 rebounds, under 1.5 assists, 0.6 steals and 0.4 blocks. He shot 44% from the field and 40% from 3. And what he is, Kyle, is he is a 3-point streamer who doesn't shoot high volumes of threes, meaning he is useless in pretty much any league, and I do not see any way for him to improve. But I am the number one Tony Snell hater. Can you offer a positive on my man Tone?
Not really. I don't trust him as a competent NBA player. Maybe he goes out there and in the past I've seen him execute really crappy coaching plans, because
maybe that's it.
But I don't think that's the truth. I think he proves the whole playing for a contract thing, or he not proves it, but he lends credence to it. I'll say that.
I didn't like them signing him to that contract, because I've never been impressed with what he does. I thought his defense even took a step back this season. The shooting's fine. He shoots 40% from three. He just doesn't take the shots, and he doesn't get involved in things. So you can shoot 40%, but if you're not taking Wayne Ellington volumes of shots, then what are you doing? Like, then if you're just taking the same amount of threes as what Jabari Parker is, and maybe I'm imagining that those shot attempts, let's have a look. He took 3.6 threes per game in his 27 minutes, while Jabari took 2.6 in his 24 minutes. Like, that's bullshit. Like, if you're out there to be a 3-point shooter, you've got to be taking more than 3 a game. If Eric Bledsoe's taking 5 a game, what is the point of him? Defense is slipping, offers nothing, can't create, can't get anyone involved, can't find his own shot, and then they don't even look for him on threes when he's knocking them down. It's bullshit. Like, there's no point in him being out there, and a lot of that's on him, and some of that's on the coaching. Maybe Budenholzer can enlighten the way that the team plays. Maybe he can become the member of Hawks/Bucks University and develop him into a wing guy, but my faith in him is fairly extinguished. We can talk about Street Hunger Brandon Jennings and his monster return after everyone was telling me that he's a top 10 point guard in the NBA and he needs to be starting and he should be over Bledsoe, and that fizzled after one game. Unsurprisingly, I don't know if we'll be back. He's okay, 1 out of 10 games maybe, but that's not anything we need to pay attention to. But let's go to one of your basketball boyfriends, Kyle, and that is Thon McCur, who looked, to be honest, piss poor for the majority of this season. And then the playoffs came around, and it was on for Thon. He was all over the place. He was providing great numbers. He started. He was blocking shots. still has defensive liabilities, but as you highlighted earlier, his ability to go out and stretch and hit the three, I think that we should be feeling at least decently confident that he will be a starter heading into next season. I'm not ready to lock it in, but I feel pretty good about it heading into his third season.
Yeah, yeah. You would think that with the way everything kind of unwound at in the playoffs, that Maker would be the guy starting at center, or expected to start at center. He did have 2 5-block games against the Celtics in the 7-game series. Started game 6 and 7. As I mentioned earlier, the Bucks were 8-4 with him as the starting center. So there's a big part of me that kind of feels like they went away from him too quickly at the beginning of the season, and just ended up giving the reins. But the kid gave the reins to Henson long before Prunty did, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know, man.
Kid was barely playing him. Like, and Thon's still allegedly 20 years of age, so he's still room to grow. But one thing that is bad about him is he is an absolutely piss-poor defender. He was in the 6th percentile of big men in defensive rebounding rate, according to Clean the Glass. That is obviously horrible, meaning 94% of big men are better than him at grabbing those defensive rebounds. And you can see that by looking at his numbers. 6.5 rebounds per 36 is not good. The block rate is pretty solid. He averaged 0.8 blocks in 17 minutes. Half a steal in 17 minutes is good. Half a three in 17 minutes is good. But that rebounding rate is an issue. And the efficiency, he really did dip this season down to a true shooting of 50. But as I said, his season wasn't great until the playoffs, where he did start to assert himself and provide some value. The stats don't look fantastic, apart from the 5 blocks in those 2 consecutive games. But he was a much better option for this team out there on the court than both Tyler Zeller and John Henson before he got himself injured. Now, I do want to get your opinion on the Bucks' first-round draft choice, Kyle. DJ Wilson, who provided, I'd say, exactly nothing for this team during his time out there, and he had opportunities. Jabari Parker was out for the majority of the season playing that position, and DJ couldn't do anything. I wasn't a big fan of the pick at the time, even less of a fan now, and for a guy to put up a negative 3.5 box score plus minus in the G League, that's worrying to me.
Yeah, there's not much to look at from what DJ Wilson did as a rookie, and to instill confidence for him going forward. Played 33 minutes in the G League over in 11 games there, and his stats didn't really scream at you. Only shot 34% from 3-point land in the G League. So, look, he is what he is. He's got good size. He's got the good measurables as far as his reach and his length, and the fact that he's he has the athletic ability to be able to defend out on the perimeter and potentially provide a little bit of rim protection, or at least enough length down there to disrupt shots. I don't know what else to say about him, man. He wasn't that great this year. I'm still not going to write the kid off, because I think that he has the tools, but yeah, he didn't really show a ton in his rookie season.
But I'll tell you who did as a rookie on this team, and I was impressed with. And I was impressed with him heading into the draft as well, and that's Sterling Brown, who played 54 games, almost 15 minutes per game. 4 points, 2.5 rebounds, half a steal, half an assist, 40, 88, and 35 is his percentages. Nothing overly standoutish there, but I thought he was a better player than Tony Snell for big chunks of this season. Obviously, we're at the time of us recording this, which is before this is being released. As I've said many times, I'm heading away for a few days, so some of this stuff's being recorded in advance. There is an issue currently brewing with Sterling Brown and some police mistreatment, which is just sort of happening at this point. So we'll again, I don't know the full details. Have you seen much on that, Kyle?
No, is that back from when he was stopped at the Rite Aid at like 2 o'clock in the morning?
Apparently, I haven't seen the footage, but apparently some video footage has come out of that, and him being having the stun gun used on him. But I haven't actually seen that, because again, at the time of recording, that hasn't I haven't had a chance to see that. I just saw that as I woke up this morning. And went, oh, okay, so shit, something's going down here. All tying in with the NFL anthem kneeling policy, all released at the same time. And yeah, haven't caught quite up on it, but there is something going down. But let's focus more on his basketball stuff. What did you think of him? Do you think that he can find himself as a regular rotation player next season?
Yeah, I definitely think Brown's going to be in the rotation next season. He's got great size for that guard slash. He's mostly going to play shooting guard, but you can roll him up to a small forward a little bit if you want at 6'6". He's a tough guy. You know, he's 23, so he came into the league a little bit, you know, more polished than some of the younger cats. And he came in willing to shoot the ball, which was huge. And he did that very good for parts of the season. I think you saw him lose confidence at times, and that was obvious and visible out there on the court if he made a bad play. And that's why he didn't necessarily continue to get consistent big minutes off the bench down the line this season. But they asked him to step up in a couple of situations, and he did. I think there's a lot to like about Sterling Brown, but he'll probably just slot into a, 14 to 22 minute roll off the bench next year, depending on who's healthy and who Budenholzer decides he likes.
Well, let's hope that that Mike isn't as infatuated with Jason Terry as what the previous Bucks coaches were, but they also got to reincorporate Matthew Dellavedova back into the rotation, who only played 38 games last season with a persistent ankle injury. And while Dally's not the greatest of players, he still averaged 4 assists in those times, so he was able to distribute the ball. Shot 37% from 3, yes, only 36% overall from the field, as he couldn't get his two-pointers to fall, but 93% from the line, scored 4 points a game, hit almost a 3. There is some value in him as a player, but for fantasy value, it's more just I can see Dellavedova pushed into a larger role because of an injury. He might be interesting to stream in for assists because he was at a stretch of games where he was getting a ton of assists, low turnovers, and that could be useful in those times when the minutes push from 18 to 24 or 25, depending on other injuries in front of him. The other guys on this team, Kyle, I don't think there's much to really talk about unless you have any pressing thoughts on Tyler Zeller or Shabazz Muhammad.
No, I mean, hopefully they don't bring Shabazz Muhammad back. And then for Tyler Zeller, he's a non-guaranteed, really cheap deal for next year. So if nothing else, he seems like a good guy or a good bloke to have on the roster for next season, especially considering how cheap he is.
Tyler Zeller, confirmed good bloke. So let's see if he is back on this team just to hang around the locker room. And I'm sure Milwaukee at some point has it written into their constitution that they need to have at least one Plumlee or Zeller on the team. They've currently got two, so they're batting above their average, but let's see if they can just knock that down to the one of those. And I reckon Marshall Plumlee might be the one to go. But Kyle, thank you for coming on and discussing your new team, your side bay, the Milwaukee Bucks. Where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA. I like to retweet NBA stuff and like awkward political stuff.
There you go. Go and follow Kyle there. Follow me at RedRock_Beeble and leave a 5-star rating for this podcast if you're so inclined. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or on YouTube, and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. We've had some big name guests on over the last couple of weeks across the network, and I'm sure there will be more to come, so make sure you're checking those out. Kyle, thanks once again for coming on.
Hey-o.
All right, guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Giannis Antetokounmpo.